This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
The Scotland Outdoors Podcast from BBC Radio Scotland.
Hello and thanks for choosing to listen to this. I'm Mark Stephen. We're digging into the archive again this week, and this time we've come up with a programme we made for a series called Our Story back in 2013. Now, it features a trip up to the secret house of Benavoord in the eastern Cairngorms. And it tells the story of the people who created that remarkable wee structure.
You've got to want to love the Cairngorms. It's not a weekend. It's a one-night stand. They're not obvious mountains. If you ask a child to draw a mountain, it's jaggy and sharp. And the Cairngorms aren't like that. They're much more rounded, much more feminine. They're much more like hills, but they're deceptive. You've got vast plateau, subarctic conditions up there, towering granite quarries, scoured out glens, ancient pine woods, and occasionally on a day like today, these sapphire lochs. And if you want to get to know the Cairngorms, you can't drive there, it's Shanks's pony, you have to walk. Hello, I'm Mark Stephen, and this is Our Story on BBC Radio Scotland. Today we're going to be exploring the magic of the eastern Cairngorms, the hills and glens accessible from Upper Deeside. Now, people have been living within this landscape for centuries. There are important drove roads like the Ladog Grú, which linked Deeside and Strathspey to carry goods long before public roads were ever put in. But it wasn't really until the mid-20th century that these hills took off as a place of recreation for people living in Aberdeen.
I love the colours. You don't get the same colours in the same heather on any other parts of the mountains.
The thing that's great about walking around here is you don't see many people. That's part of the appeal to me, is that you can go out, especially on a weekday, almost any time of the year, and see hardly anybody. I mean, that's kind of nice.
You have to love the mountains to work in them, because the Scottish mountains can be pretty harsh. No, it's not the nicest environment, but when it does reward you with some lovely weather, and the mountain air up here is so clear and so fresh, you know, you just wouldn't want to work anywhere else.
Yeah, I really like this, like, going up and just, like, when you're up there, just look around and see how, like, really nice it is, just looking down and looking at everything.
We're walking up past Invercauld House towards Glen Slugan, and this was our traditional route up to the secret house back in the 1960s.
Ian R. Mitchell is the author of Mountain Days and Bothy Nights. If we're heading into something called the secret house, you can't tell me where the secret house is, but roughly give me an idea where we're going.
No, I think any person who ever located the secret house or put it in a grid reference with instructions would probably not live very long, because it has a very, very strong resonance with not only northeast mountaineers but mountaineers throughout Scotland who know of its existence. And the whole fun of it is to try and find it or be taken there by somebody who knows, not to just turn up there casually. And I've met many, many people. In fact, I met a couple in the car park there today, a couple up from Glasgow, who've tried on several occasions to find the house, and I was very, very pleased to find out they hadn't done it yet. Up to about the Second World War, most of the people who went hill walking and mountaineering tended to come from a fairly privileged background in Aberdeen as elsewhere. After the war, things changed, and a much broader range of people were able, through improved access, through cheaper equipment, through things like hostels and so on, were able to get on the hills. And in the 40s, 50s and 60s, a large number of kids from fairly ordinary working class backgrounds became in many ways the backbone of Cairngorm mountaineering.
My name is Ashi Alistair Brevner. Let's start with Charlie Smith, who was a shipwright originally, but soon got the job of harbour diver. This was in the days of copper helmets and lead boots. And the thing was, he was 5'4", and the suit was made for a diver 6 foot. So how on earth he got on water, I have no idea. But he was absolutely mad about opera, and he knew more about opera than all of us put together. He was a mine of information. And there was Jim Robertson. Now, he was a monumental mason, obviously, engineering and granite are the two mainstays in Aberdeen. He was middle 20s, quite elderly to us. And he was a very keen communist, and he was always extolling the virtues of communism, decrying all these big houses, which we agreed with, of course. And then Doug Mollison, he was the only one of us who had a white collar job. He worked in the townhouse. He used to come away with some incredible stories, funny stories of what used to happen in the courthouse. And he used to keep us in stitches over all the various characters that would appear in court. So he was quite a nice lad.
This is just such a beautiful location. As we're stepping out of the sunlight into dapple shade, these magnificent trees, there's everything here from Scots pine, Wellingtonia. I mean, this is, you know, a rich man's playground. And you've got these working class guys coming out, I mean, not for the weekends, because a lot of them worked on a Saturday morning.
Yes, they would come out on Saturday afternoon. They would get the famous Strachan's bus that, from Aberdeen at 3:15, and they'd come out here for a Saturday night, and they'd be back on the Sunday night for work on Monday. So it was a kind of day and a half rather than a long weekend they came out for.
You would walk into Bonacord Square. The red buses, Strachan's buses, were sitting there. All the climbers with their rucksacks were standing around outside in little discussion groups, because as you went up to the bus, you had an idea of where you wanted to go that weekend. And you wandered around all these little groups saying, where are you going this weekend? And someone would say, oh, Lochnagar this weekend. And someone would say, I fancy going up Glenelg, perhaps. And you would think, oh, I think that seems a good idea. So you'd form these little groups each weekend, going to different places, and it was totally interchangeable. Next week you'd be with someone quite different. So we all got to know each other quite well. Fairly small group altogether, probably 100, 200 climbers, perhaps, at that time. No one else was on the hill. If you met anyone on the hill, you were sure to know them. So from there, we would get on to the 3:15 bus up to Ballater for those who were going to Lochnagar, on to Bremore for the others. Slogan became a favourite spot because you got off the bus at Invercauld, could get up the hill fairly quickly on the Saturday night to camp, and then on the Sunday, you come down to Invercauld, and the bus took 15 minutes to get from Bremore down to Invercauld gates, and it was quite a valuable 15 minutes. It gave you just that extra few minutes to get back to the bus in time.
One of the things that separate Cairngorm mountaineering from the rest of mountaineering in Scotland, one is the long walk in, the fact that it's such a big area that the hills aren't beside the road. You have to walk 5, 6, 7, 10 miles sometimes. The second thing is, and it fits in with this, is the bothy culture. Most of the mountains in the Cairngorms have a dedicated kind of bothy or howth or shelter where people would go and spend the night or spend the weekend in order to facilitate their mountaineering. And that is, I think, very different from the West Coast mountaineering tradition, which is much more a day-out tradition, a roadside tradition, or a camping tradition.
Never go terribly far away from a pub.
Yes. When I moved to Glasgow in the 1970s, my friends had a theory about why Aberdonians were so mean and dour, and it was because they never had time to spend in the pub before they went on the hill, because they were too busy hiking away into the bothies.
I said casually, the Cairngorms are pretty dull in summer. Nothing like as interesting as the West Highlands. Look at the view. These hills have as much shapeliness as a plate of Bath buns. People walk miles and miles in order to stand on Munro's with about as much alpine atmosphere as a deserted football field. To get there, all they need is sheer brute endurance. Just look at the view. As I gaze around me, ladies and gentlemen, I am constantly reminded of practically nothing.
I love the massive plateaus of the hills and the tracks that go on and on, and then when you're finally to the top, you get these sudden, dramatic, rocky crops and sort of almost rocks that look like stalagmites. I think it's very unique, so it's very beautiful. It's quite foreboding sometimes when you're out on your own, and I like that. I like the combination between when you're walking along Lyn of Dee and it's quite cosy with all the trees and camping places, and then when you're on the tops, it's a completely different atmosphere, and it's really sort of, well, it's quite dark in a way. Whereas the Western Highlands is different because you're kind of expecting it straight away, but here there's like a journey until you get to these grey croppy tops.
Bothying is fairly primitive mountaineering. It's not like the Austrian Alpine Club where the huts are like hotels or all sorts of things in between. It's probably appeals to the deep-suited Calvinism and desire for suffering of the Scottish psyche, I think. That plus the weather. If you can survive the Scottish weather and Scottish bothies, I think you make a good Himalayan mountaineer.
I'm just walking through the trees at the moment, and through the trees you can see Invercold House down there. The guys who walked through here, I think the phrase was they were constantly being harried by the gamekeepers. Now, why?
Well, after the war, it was a different sort of mindset to now. I think in those days, the idea that tourism in the Highlands could be one day based largely, or to a great extent, on the hill walker or the bothier, the mountaineer, would have been ridiculous. And I don't think the mountaineers were as welcome on these big estates at that period as they possibly are now.
We had to sort of sneak around, you know, and dodge all the big houses, edge our way past the gamekeeper's house. You know, I remember in the Gelder, I never met this chap, but the Queen's the head keeper. Anyway, his name was McCarty. Never met him, but he was feared by all the climbers. Everything was built like a barn door. And McCarty lived just at the bottom of the Gelder Glen, and it was a nice access to get onto that side of Lochnagar. And I remember going up there once or twice to Gelder, and we carried a little can of oil with us because we had to go through a little wicket gate past his house. We always made sure it didn't make any sound as we opened it.
Something I think, you know, unless you're of a certain age, you don't realise the difference that the Land Reform Act actually made. Because I can remember, never mind gamekeepers, I can remember bypassing shepherds' cottages, farmers' houses. You just didn't want the confrontation.
Absolutely, and I think that since the access legislation has been passed, there have been almost no problems of access, and all the worries the landowners had about vandalism and so on have proved to be, as expected, without foundation, and there's a much more relaxed atmosphere now. That wasn't the case 50 or 60 years ago, certainly not.
But the mountains weren't completely out of bounds. Well-known characters like gamekeeper at the Mar Estate, Bob Scott, and Maggie Grewer of Inveraray became famous for their particular form of hospitality.
This is Maggie Grewer's chair, and the president of the Cairngorm Club has custody over it for the 3 years. Thistle Cottage in Inveraray was where Maggie Grewer lived with her parents, and they ran a croft there and also provided hospitality for people to go through the Cairngorms. So for a meagre amount of money, you could get a bed for the night, you could get scones and oatcakes and all sorts of things like that. And Maggie apparently would be sitting in her chair beside the fire, giving you all the gossip as well as feeding you quite well, apparently. When Maggie Grewer died in 1939, her family left it to Hugh Welsh, who was to become president of the Cairngorm Club. And he had been quite friendly with Maggie. And then when Hugh died, he bequeathed it to the Cairngorm Club. So it's been around ever since. But it's very interesting to note that one arm is more worn than the other arm, just where one would sit with one's hand is worn more at the right-hand side. So I take it Maggie Grewer would have been right-handed then and would sit and sort of worry the wood away at that side. There was one time I was sitting in the chair, not thinking about anything much in particular, And where we have the chair is in the kitchen beside our stove, which is oil-fired. And I was eventually aware of a smell of peat smoke. And I thought, that's strange, because, you know, there was nowhere it could have been coming from in the house. And I had always associated peat with the Northwest Highlands and the islands. And then when I looked at the information about the chair, it mentioned that Maggie Grewer's fire was peat. I maybe don't like to think too much more about that, but I just felt for a wee while that Maggie Grewer wasn't that far away.
A very notable one, which most people with longer memories of the Cairngorms will remember, was Bob Scott, the gamekeeper on the Mar Estate, who lived up in the Louisbeg Cottage until 1973, I think he retired. If you wanted a caricature of a gamekeeper, big lad, stocky lad, typical outfit, you know, the plus fours, the tweeds, the Glenmorangie tartan face, you know, grumpy deep voice.
Bob was a wonderful person. I really love Bob. He had a very rough exterior and a very rough tongue, and he didn't get in the wrong side, but most of it was just play acting. You know, once you got to know him, he was a wonderful chap.
To all the climbers of the post-war generation, this was a character who you knew because he had a bothy outside his cottage, which he rented out for a shilling a night, as it was in back in those pre-metric days. And he obviously enjoyed the company of the mountaineers, and also as a gamekeeper, he could keep an eye on them. If they were all in one place, I think Bob thought he could keep an eye on them. They're spread about all over the place, you never knew what they'd be up to.
In this particular instance, we were in the bothy. There's a very young English lad there who had never been in the Cairngorms before. Quite intrepid for a young lad. Must have been about 14 or 15, I think. And we were brewing up, and Bob, as usual, leaning against the doorposts, hands in pockets, plus fours on. And one of us said to this young lad, "Where have you been today then?" And he said, "Oh, been up Ben Patachui there." And we all looked at each other, "Ben Patachui? Where on earth is that?" And we look across at Bob, and his face was impassive, you know. And then we realised Bob was giving this young lad just a lot of nonsense about the hill training. This chap had all the wrong names. So, later that night, when Bob would know, we put him right about what he'd actually been on. That was typical of Bob.
Mankind is sated with noise, but up here, this naked, this elemental savagery, this infinitesimal cross-section of sound from energies that have been at work for aeons in the universe, exhilarates rather than destroys.
As ever, it's sometimes good just to sort of sit and take in your surroundings. The hills at the moment are 1,000 shades of green. They're really quite extraordinary in the foreground. I mean, you've got lots of heather and blaberry and the sort of scrub grasses. The soil behind it is sort of pinkish red. And you see the scree slopes down there. Again, it's sort of grey pink. But you can see in Loch na Garr how the Cairngorms get their name, the Blue Hills, Cairngorm. Because as the hills recede away into the distance, you know, the foreground, they're quite a dark blue, and then it just gets lighter and lighter and lighter. And then after a while, you start to struggle to think, is that a cloud formation or is that a hill back there? There's a clarity to the air here. And a quality to the silence, too.
Now, one of the really remarkable things about the water here is the fact that it is always clearing.
Yeah, I think it's because there's few nutrients in it, so it's always very clear. It tastes absolutely gorgeous.
Well, I'll give that a go. Mmm. Oh, that's lovely.
I can hear many wonderful things in our mountains. All the bird songs are in tune and sound like they're a choir, with a little robin tweeting a solo. The buzzing of the busy bees, the wind rustling through the trees, the rushing of the waterfall down the stream.
Oh, that just feels so refreshing. It's a boiling day today. It's probably about I don't know, I'm saying 26, 27 degrees. We come out of the trees, there's this burn, and it's obviously sitting very, very low at the moment because a lot of the stones are exposed. But we're now into the sort of, you know, the foothills, essentially.
In our magnificent mountains, I can see the white fluffy clouds behind the big curvy mountains. I can see little sparkling rivers with tiny mini beasts and a big lochan with roots shooting out. I can see a hind and a stag dancing in the heather and the ants running about around their hills.
My name's Matilda Brown. I've just run a 12-week project with Braemar School and my ensemble, and we've been writing music inspired by living in Braemar, what matters to us, and the mountain landscape. They're outdoor kids, and so they've responded really well to the whole project. It's very natural, and they're very fit, and they just want to be outside a lot. It's lovely to see how connected they are with their own, you know, with the landscape, and when, oh, we've been up here, oh, we've been there, oh, we know that. And so it's great to hear that.
I mainly just ski here every winter. I ski here a lot, and then I like to do all mountain stuff. I just start to walk, bike, and, well, ski in winter. I was part of the Cairngorm ski team that won gold.
We can, as adults, say they must do this and they must do that, but the only way that we'll preserve this stunning scenery is for the young children today to believe passionately in its value. And this project is really about emphasising that.
Canoeing is my favourite sport right now. I go biking a lot, and I go running on weekends and then after school. I also do canoeing and kayaking down the River Dee, which is really enjoyable.
Just walking and running and just biking.
Like over 3,000 feet, so they're Munros and I go 40 on them.
Would you have any idea now?
No.
No. Well, neither had a few guys. It was about 20 years ago I was spending New Year in the house. And we come out in the morning, where we were standing were three guys in their bivvy bags who spent a very miserable night. They hadn't found it. And we're probably within, well, we're certainly less than 50 yards from it. Mm. And no indication. Unless you knew, you wouldn't know, as the old saying goes.
Come here a minute. Oh, wow. That is uncanny. You come out over the top of the horizon there, and all of a sudden, here's the building. And you would not, in a month of Sunday, spot this.
You could pass that, you could just go down there and back again, you could... Huh? Unless you came up on this wee ledge, absolutely no way would you see it.
This is an inspired location for a house.
Absolutely. The people who did this were poets, they were dreamers, and we can only thank them for all the work they did 60 years ago. It's given us this little treasure to enjoy.
All you can really see from here is auricular stains. It's a corrugated iron roof, held down by more rocks. And they've actually incredibly got guttering up here too, and this was all hauled up here. I'm actually going to have to come in here backwards because it's built for midgets. Oh, and it's lovely and cool. Now, first thing you see when you come in is two chairs with black plastic seats. And the legs have been cut off to about 9 inches to accommodate the fact that it's actually very low. This is stunning.
Absolutely, isn't it?
Oh, it's phenomenal.
The best times, I think, was because of Charlie. When we would arrive, he would be sitting there quietly with earphones on, and he'd have an aerial draped all over the hillside, and he'd been listening to opera directly from Milan. This sounds nothing nowadays, but at that time, it seemed miraculous that he was hearing La Scala Milan halfway up Benavour. But he was happy to share it with us. He got a big billy can, put the earphones in the billy can, and we all lay in a circle round about this billy can. And it was absolutely marvellous listening to this super singing coming all the way from Lascala in this wild place. It was just wonderful.
You know, you were saying earlier that the climbers essentially were getting harried by the Invercold gamekeepers. Once this was built, was it the same? I mean, the keepers must have known it was here.
It's perverse. I mean, trying to ascribe too much rationality to human behaviour, I've always found never works. Yes, they did find out about this place, and they did get to know the guys who'd built it. And I always wonder if the laird ever knew, or if the gamies kept it a quiet secret to themselves. Because certainly, when I was coming here, the keepers knew about it. And if you said you were going to the house, they would just nod, and that seemed to be okay. You were an okay kind of guy. They knew where you were coming from.
I'll be honest, when you started talking about a secret house for a start, my thought was, how secret can it be out in the Cairngorms? I mean, it's bald, it's open. I mean, how could you possibly hide something like this? Until you're on it, you've no idea.
Absolutely no idea. It would be almost impossible to stumble upon this accidentally. I'm not entirely. You might come down off Benavour the wrong way and come down that hill at the back. You might. But unless you knew it was here, you wouldn't imagine there was anything here.
I was just sitting chatting to Ian here outside the house, and we saw two figures on the skyline, and they're making their way down the glen, and I suspect they're trying to find this. Hello, how are you doing?
Hi, how are you?
Are you looking for anything particular?
No, we found it. It was here a long time ago once.
Really?
Yeah. I've lived in Aberdeen for a long time. I first started hill walking here when I first got here in 88, and I heard about it, but of course people would give false impressions of where it was. Oh yeah, no, exactly. When I first heard about it, I always thought it was up really like at the base of Benavour or something. The tradition is great, is that you either find it yourself or you're with someone who feels you're appropriate to know that where it is.
It was probably somewhere in the 80s I was telling my son Bruce about this story that we built this place expecting to find the ruins. And I was wildly surprised to find it was still there and in even better shape than we'd left it. And that was wonderful to know that the next generation was using it too.
You've been listening to Our Story on BBC Radio Scotland. If you'd like more information about the programme, then please go to our website at bbc.co.uk/Radio Scotland and click on Our Story. From the splendour of the Eastern Cairngorms, thank you very much for listening.
I think if anybody asked me for a particular location that summed up what Cairngorms mountaineering and the social aspect of Cairngorms mountaineering is, sitting here outside the Howth, looking up at Benavour, that sort of sums it all up for me, what the Cairngorms is all about.
Oh, it enriches you. The value of it is just quite incredible for me, both as an individual. I love my walking. Also, it's a time to reflect and just think that we need the youngsters today to do something that will help preserve all this.
It's just being here and getting all the scenery. When you get to the top and just skiing down the terrain, it's great. It's perfect. Couldn't really wish for anything better.
An edition of Our Story from BBC Radio Scotland, first broadcast in 2013, and it was great to hear the voice of the late Ashi Bremner again. Helen and I actually went back to the Secret Howth a few years later with the poet Rachel McCrum, and she wrote a poem about that. If you type in Secret Howth poem into a search engine, you should find it. We like hearing from you, and where you listen to this podcast, you can email us at outofdoors@bbc.co.uk. From all of us here at BBC Aberdeen, thanks for listening.